From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in front of a fictional fountain in New York City's Central Park, where six friends are splashing around and dancing. Fast forward 17 years, and the cast of the mega-hit sitcom Friends is sitting on their coffee shop couch in front of that same fountain. The long-awaited Friends reunion premiered on HBO Max last night, and the reviews range from applause from superfans, some pretty harsh criticism from major publications, and everything in between. Were you a fan of the show? It was a hit in its day and is still one of the most popular programs in syndication. It's a show about a time in your life where your friends are supposed to be more like your family, and fans love its nostalgia, but it's not without its issues. Critics have called it out for its homophobia, transphobia, fat shaming, the super white cast. Conversations about Friends raise questions about how we should judge media now. And do we do it in the context of their time, or do we do it in the context of our time? What do we sort of give it a pass for and what not? I will put my bias on the table. I've never been a fan of the show, but that's okay. I'm not somebody who thinks, you know, we should make fun of people for liking things we don't like. I want you to like what you like, but I do think it's interesting to talk about how we reevaluate what was popular. And I'd like to welcome our guests now. Irene Kanyu is a freelance writer and editor who covers tech and culture. Irene, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Deanna Spiata is a communication specialist and a singer-songwriter, and I think a super fan of the show. Is that right, Deanna?
That's correct. Thanks for having me today.
Amanda Chestnut is an artist and educator, and I think not a super fan of the show. Hi, Amanda.
You are correct, Evan. Hi, thank you for having me.
And Douglas Jay is a contributing writer for the political commentary website Balloon Juice. Hi, Doug. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Let me ask all of you just for your own kind of broad-ranging thoughts before we get into some specific issues here. If you were a fan of the show then or now, and perhaps a little bit about why. Irene?
I was a fan of the show then, and I think a lot of the reason why was because I was like 10 years old when I became a fan of the show. I was kind of the target audience in a way. I think it was geared towards younger people, and it was this form of escapism for me and my friends to watch the show about this fantasy adulthood where, like, you're being a waitress and you can live in a New York City apartment, like a giant New York City apartment,
giant,
and be surrounded by friends and always have all your needs met. Like, yeah, it was this really fun form of escapism that I thought adulthood would be like. Mm. Little did I know.
They set you
not
up, Irene.
It, not quite it. They lied.
Deanna, super fan. Why is that?
I did not watch the show when it was live on TV. It sounds like I'm similar age to Irene and similar. It appeals to me in a similar way. I started watching it in college. It was actually the DVD set was my first major purchase as an adult, a young adult. And I agree. I think it was just out of reach and like unrealistic enough that it could be a dream. And something to fantasize about, like, oh, is this what being an adult is like? It doesn't, you know, even though they work, it doesn't really focus on work. It focuses on all the fun they have outside of work. And then I was in college, so I was living with my friends, and my friends felt like family. So I think I could relate to it in a way, but then also dream about this fun world where problems weren't really that deep. And yeah, living in a huge New York City apartment as well with all your friends is always a fun thing to dream about.
Mm. Amanda Chestnut, what do you think?
I did watch some of it when it first came out. It was on at dinner time. You know, if the TV was on, it was one of the things that was on. And I've never really been a huge fan of it. I've grown to dislike it even more as I've gotten older. As opposed to the other show, which it is often pitted against, which is Seinfeld, which I've grown to like more as I've gotten older. So it's never really quite done it for me. And as I've gotten older and become more media savvy, I've kind of figured out the reasons why.
We'll talk more about that in a moment. That's very interesting. Douglas J., what do you think about Friends?
So I started to watch it initially. I was in graduate school, and it was on after Seinfeld, and I was a huge Seinfeld fan. And I watched Friends for a little while, and You know, honestly, back then, I'm not sure everybody can remember this, there wasn't really that much to do, right? We didn't have the internet or anything. And so just some sort of boring, bland TV show, you know, was enjoyable. And then when they got into the Ross Rachel stuff and the haircut and everything, I just couldn't take it anymore. I probably kept watching it because I had nothing else to do, but it started to really bother me.
Do you think the show holds up, Doug?
No. I think it's much worse than I expected, actually. I watched some clips this morning expecting to like it a little bit because I like Joey. I think Joey's funny. I think Phoebe's funny. But I'd forgotten just how irritating Chandler was. And I really wasn't ready for that. So, no, it didn't hold up for me at all.
I debated whether I should tell this story, but I'm just going to, again, sort of my bias on the table here. So I had a college girlfriend who loved Friends, and I just didn't. But I watched a lot because, you know, I was dating a super friend. And then the season finale came in May when Ross was marrying, help me out, Deanna, who was the British woman he was marrying?
Emily,
okay. So it was the season finale. It was a big wedding thing. And I just didn't want to watch it. So I I went out and played basketball with a friend of mine out in front of my girlfriend's dorm while she watched. She was very upset that I didn't want to watch it. When apparently Ross says the wrong name or something, right? He says Jennifer Aniston's name or something like that when he's supposed to say Emily's name. Am I getting this right, Deanna? Is that correct?
Yes. He says, I take thee, Rachel.
Okay, I take thee, Rachel. The entire dorm like shook like there was an earthquake. It was a four-story dorm building, and I was out playing basketball in front, and I thought a bomb had gone off. People were screaming. Doors were slamming. And, you know, so my friend Jeremy and I kind of went in and we sort of poked fun at the reaction. And my girlfriend broke up with me over that. So that was that was it.
that could be a friend.
Oh,
that
no.
could be a Friends episode itself.
When did I see that?
It's a true story. And, you know, everybody was better for it. You know, she wanted a super fan. I just couldn't be the super fan in her life. It didn't work out. But I remember the sound in that building when Ross did that, because I said something happened. I mean, it was like everybody was watching that show. So that apparently was a very big moment. But Amanda Chestnut, when you go back now and think about Seinfeld vis-a-vis Friends, you said you like Seinfeld more over time. You like Friends less. Why?
Because the characters on Seinfeld are supposed to be jerks. They were written as rude and entitled and self-serving jerks. And the characters on Friends were written as normative, but they're rude and entitled self-serving jerks. So the Seinfeld characters and the writing on Seinfeld is a little bit more self-aware of who the characters are and exactly how they're impacting the people around them. And it makes it a lot funnier.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And so let's do this. Let's work through some of the issues that the critics raise. And I want to hear from all of you about whether, like, I think it's fair to always look back and say, you know, why was this funny or why was this acceptable? Why was this okay? I think it's valuable to try to be generous and try to understand cultural norms, et cetera. But at the same time, man, the list of Friends, it's so much worse than I sort of remembered. So I've got a couple of clips here, and I want to start with transphobia. So Chandler's dad was, as I understand it, trans. Again, I watched a lot of the show, but I'm not a super fan, so some of this is from memory, and some of this is me trying to bring back, kind of dig back into the research here. But, you know, when I read a BuzzFeed piece last night about it, one of the writers said that for 20 years, his own parents thought that being trans was the same as being a drag queen, for example. And I want to listen to this clip of Monica meeting Chandler's parents for the first time at Chandler and Monica's wedding reception.
These are my parents, Judy and Jack Geller.
It's lovely to meet you.
So are you his mother or his father?
Jack!
What? I've never seen one before.
There's Ross. Why don't you go talk to him?
Oh. I didn't even have a chance to act as though I'm okay with it.
Hello, all. Hi, Dad.
Hi, Mr. Bing.
Nora. Charles.
It's so great to see you both here.
Yes. Although I think we may be seeing a little too much of some people. Aren't you a little old to be wearing a dress like that?
Don't you have a little too much penis to be wearing a dress like that?
Oh, my God.
Oh, hey, could you do me a favor and would you talk to Chandler's dad and try to keep him away from Chandler's mom?
Yeah, but I don't know what he looks like.
He is the man in the black dress.
Man in the...
Hi, I'm Rachel. I'm a friend of Monica and Chandler's.
I'm Amanda.
Oh, I get it. A man, duh.
Sorry, I'm just going to say that last joke is really lazy. But the scene itself, Irene, you know, what are you thinking when you hear that scene?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Amanda's onto something when she says it's like not very self-aware of how like just insensitive it is. They're meant to be charming and funny, where it's an extremely insensitive joke. And definitely there are shows where jokes like that are made, like, I mean, shows of today, like Pose, where jokes like that can be made, but they're made with self-awareness and intention, and you're laughing with the right people versus on Friends, where the joke is at the expense of this seemingly trans person. So, yeah. Especially just listening to it and not even watching it, it's like, this is just not funny at all.
Doug, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's... There's a side of it where it's easy to say, well, it was a different time, and so there wasn't the same kind of sensitivities that we have today. But I actually think this goes beyond that. I mean, there's kind of a history of comedic movies that involve men dressed as women, like Some Like It Hot or Tootsie or something like that. And they don't have anything close to this level of insensitivity and gag jokes, you know. And it doesn't really – and it's not just things that were sensitivities that changed as well, right? There was that whole Fat Monica – subplot I thought was very cruel and mean-spirited, for example. The whole really stereotypical way they portray Joey's Italian family is kind of mean and insensitive too. So I think there's a lot of it, and I don't think it can be explained away by saying it was a different time.
Amanda Chestnut, what do you think?
I was slack-jawed listening to that. I'm kind of surprised somebody thought that was a good idea. Like, how did that make that all the way through the writer's room and onto television? It's cruel. It's just mean to me to listen to. Like, and like Irene was saying, there's definitely ways where you can take humor about gender and sexuality and have it be funny. We're kind of funny animals. Like, there's definitely ways to do that, but that was a miss on that one.
Yeah, and see, this is where it's unfair to have the superfan have to defend it, because I suspect, you know, everybody's going to have moments on every show they like where you look back and wish things were a little different. Is that one of them for you, Deanna? Do you hear that and go, yuck?
Yes, and I think for me, part of my responsibility of being a superfan of any show is to acknowledge the things that I was blind to at the beginning of watching the show, and then how I've grown over the years and want to learn how to love people better and not be harmful. And the homophobic jokes and transphobic jokes throughout Friends send harmful messages, especially to young people. And like Doug said, it's hard to say, well, it was a different time. Well, I think that's why inclusion is so important, and having producers and writers who represent the people being represented on the show.
Yeah, here's the strange thing. The three creators of the show, one of them is a gay man. So when we talk about the homophobia, you know, I think we've mentioned this on the show before. I mean, I'm a Seinfeld fan, but there's a Seinfeld episode where Elaine's on the train going to what she tells the woman on the train, I'm going to a lesbian wedding. And that's a laugh track line. Like, just the idea of a lesbian wedding is funny in 1993 or whatever it was. And that happens throughout Friends. Every time Ross mentions his ex-wife, who is in a relationship with a woman, he sputters. He can't even describe it. He says things like, they're kind of like buddies, and people kind of laugh, kind of like, oh, because, you know, they're gay. Like, that's a funny thing to them. And yet one of the creators of the show was gay. Like, part of me agrees with our panel saying, like, who in the writer's room is kind of like, yeah, this is a good idea. Let's put this all the way through. And so when you think about all the different little homophobic lines, they're always kind of ribbing Chandler, who kissed a man one time, that stuff like that. Or this clip that we have here of when Ross is interviewing nannies for his son and is like flabbergasted that a nanny could be a man. Listen.
I love him. I love him. I love him.
Oh, come on. He's a guy.
So he's smart. He's qualified. Give me one good reason we shouldn't try him out.
Because it's weird.
Why? Wow, I never looked at it that way.
What kind of job is that for a man? A nanny? I mean, it's like if a woman wanted to be...
Yes?
King?
I hope you don't mind. I use some of my homemade lotion on Emma. It's a mixture of calendula and honey cream. It'll dry that rash right up. Plus... it keeps the hands young.
Yes, Sandy, you're hired.
That's great. Oh. I'm sorry. It's just such an emotional thing when you're welcomed into a new family.
Oh, God, I can hear.
You gotta be at least bi.
Okay, Irene, what do you think of that clip?
All right, here's what I'm going to say as this clip was playing and even after everyone's comments. It's like there is so many scenes and jokes where I feel like if they had had more representation in the writer's room, it could have been really funny. Because what is funny about this show, and I think was especially poignant to me when I was young as a teenager, was just how each character, a lot of them were extremely neurotic, and they were so like... Ross is written as such this neurotic, anxious person, even about his ex-wife. Like, it's clearly a lot of that is like that's homophobia for sure. But it's also just like his character being such this insecure person that had his like masculinity apparently like insulted by the fact that his wife left him for a woman. Like there's so many lost opportunities where I feel like if writers' rooms had been more inclusive in the day, it could have been a show that stood the test of time. Because the joke itself is funny, right? It's like Ross is just irrationally, to me and to Rachel, is irrationally insecure. But unfortunately, the butt of the joke is the fact that this man doesn't express his masculinity in a way that Ross can support. And so that makes it become, it becomes a less funny joke because of that unfortunate stereotype. But it just has so much potential, and that me as like a 13-year-old found that hilarious. So,
yeah, and this is maybe like, you know, when I think about Deanna and Irene making that point about representation in the writer's room, when you listen for where the laugh lines are, that's the flag for you on what either the writers thought should be the funny thing. Because Deanna, I think to Irene's point, this could have been... the joke here could have been how insecure and really sort of ignorant Ross was being. But ultimately, the joke still comes back around to, look, it's a guy who's a nanny. You know, where it's almost right. Like it's like they were close on this one, Deanna. What did you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a good point. I was thinking the same thing that Rachel is saying, Ross, you're wrong. You're being ridiculous in putting men in these toxic masculine roles. And so I totally agree. They were so close. And then you're right. The joke still comes back on Sandy, the nanny. And I was thinking, and this is just, I don't know. When I was thinking, listening to that clip, I just think it's mind boggling to me that this was probably like early 2000s by this point in the series. And we just can't accept, or at least the writers of the show didn't know that like men can care about their skincare and care for children and be loving parental figures without, and that being totally separate from sexual expression or attraction or gender identity, you know?
Yeah, I think that's well said. Amanda, what did you think there?
I laughed at it, but the parts that were funny were not the parts that were laugh tracked to me. Like the parts that I found myself laughing the most to were not the parts that were actually supposed to be funny. So again, it was close. I want to really like it, but then it's like, oh yeah, that's right. No, oh no, I'm sorry. I'm actually really disappointed because you're going to actually just laugh at the Manny instead. Okay, well, never mind.
Doug.
So, I think there are a lot of, to me, the issue really is that the writing is so lazy, right? I mean, I feel like everyone is saying this missed the mark. It's because they had to go for the cheap laugh at the expense of the male nanny at the end, right? I feel like in some ways the issue here is just their inability to keep themselves from going for every possible cheap laugh they could get, you know? I feel like it's as much that as it is actual insensitivity. They're just like, we gotta milk every possible thing out of this. So after we've made fun of Ross's neuroticism, which is funny, we've gotta get one more laugh out of it by taking a shot at the male nanny, you know. Mm. And that's kind of my issue with the show in general. It's lazy and it's too much grabbing at every possible gimmick to get a laugh.
That's a good point too. This is Deanne. I just wanted to say that's a good point because this was around season 9. And there's criticism that as the seasons went on, like they're kind of running out of plot lines and.
Well, when Rachel dates Joey, the writers have told you they've run out of ideas.
Right.
But I think, Deanne, I think that happens, you know, to every show that has a long run, the characters probably become more of a caricature of whatever their individual traits are. And I think that's. Can be interesting or amusing, but also I think it could make characters a little one note. Did you find that happening in Friends, Deanna?
Yes, especially with the male characters, with Ross, Chandler, and Joey. Joey becomes, like at the beginning of the series, he's kind of like a womanizer, and he's a little like not always in the loop, but towards the end of the series, he's just portrayed as dumb or like stupid. And I feel like that's not true to his character so much. And then same thing with Ross. Ross becomes really whiny and more neurotic. And Chandler, I think, just becomes more exaggerated in his jokes and the delivery of his jokes.
I have promised Deanna that before the end of the hour, we are going to talk about some of what she really did like about it. So, but do you know what I do for the Connections audience? I sat down and watched a 1-hour and 45-minute Friends reunion last night to prepare for this. an hour and 45 minutes? And James Corden, who I usually like, you know, they didn't talk about the issues we're talking about here. They didn't, you know, he didn't even take the time, for example, to say to Matthew Perry, hey, you know, it's well known that during the show's run, you had some issues off screen that were rough for you, and your fans who love you might just want to know how you're doing. How are you doing? Instead, Matthew Perry's on there kind of slurring words, and no one really knows why. There's rumors he had a root canal that day. There's rumors he had a stroke. And it's not fair to him, but it wasn't even interesting to me. I just thought, like, there's actually a lot of interesting ground you can mine here. You could ask the cast, if you look back, are there any issues that you wish had been handled differently on the comedic side of things? They didn't do that either. But again, I'm just being sort of a grump here. So let's just do one more clip, and then I promise we'll talk about some other things. But Doug mentioned the fat-shaming part. And Monica in the show, played by Courtney Cox, I guess past Monica was heavy, and she wore a fat suit for different scenes. And so in one of the scenes we've got here, Monica runs into one of Chandler's ex-girlfriends and realizes that Chandler broke up with her because she gained weight. Let's listen.
Hey, you know, a weird thing happened today when I was at brunch. This woman overheard that I was marrying you, and she wished me good luck.
That's sweet.
No, it was more like a good luck.
So, what did this woman look like?
She was, like, 30, dark hair, attractive.
Well, is there any chance you were looking into a bright, shiny thing called a mirror?
Come on, was it someone maybe you dated in college?
No, I only dated two girls in college, both blonde, both not attractive. Hold on 1 second, let me check this out.
What are you doing?
Well, let's see. Okay, is that her?
Oh my God, yes! Who is she?
Julie Graff, my camp girlfriend.
Did you break up with her?
No, we're still together. Oh, yeah, we went out for 2 summers, and then I broke up with her.
Why?
Well, because she came back the 3rd summer, and she'd gotten really fat.
Fat?
I did not say fat. I said fat.
You broke up with a girl because she was fat?
Yeah, but it was a really, really long time ago. Does she still feel bad?
Apparently, she does.
Well, you know what they say, elephants never forget. Seriously, good luck marrying me.
And that's just one of many. I mean, writers have said that the implication with the Monica character is that she gained value as a person when she lost all that weight. So I'll just go up the list here. Doug, what do you think?
Well, again, I hate to keep dwelling on this, but the thing that gets me with that scene is the fat, that like drawing out the word, not saying the word. Oh my God, that's like the lowest of the low in comedy writing. But I actually didn't think that scene was quite as bad as I expected, because in the end, after he makes the terrible joke about the elephant stuff, he says, "Good luck marrying me." You know, and so I feel like that one's not as bad because in the joke is really on him at the end.
Okay, Amanda.
I don't think that one's as bad.
Okay, Amanda, what do you think?
I think that they could have done a little bit more to point it at him instead, because that good luck without hearing what comes next. That good luck marrying me could have been like, "Mom, I'm a jerk, and I'm just going to stay that way. Good luck, haha," or "Oh, I was a jerk," and. We're all going to need a lot of luck in this. So I don't know. Like, I would want to hear a little bit more to really think about the whole scene. But it could have done. Fatness is a thing. And I'm a fat person, and I know lots of fat folk. And getting dumped because you're fat is a thing that happens to people. So can we make that a funny thing sometimes? Probably, if you're a skilled enough writer. I don't think that happened in this instance necessarily. Like C-, if I'm giving it a grade.
Okay. It's not an F, C- there. I do think, Deanna, that, I do think Doug's interpretation is one that I shared. It sounded to me like Chandler was realizing that he's a heel, there, and that was the joke. But I wonder how you felt about that scene, Deanna.
Yep. I realized that it's because I remember the rest of this episode. So it didn't strike me as bad because Chandler's being a little more self-deprecating, kind of like Amanda mentioned. Mm-hmm. But in the episode, he ends up going to that ex-girlfriend, going to her apartment and apologizing to her. And then Monica and he have a deeper conversation about it when they get home, because it's really bothering her that she's afraid that if they get married and she has kids and her body changes, that he'll leave her. And he addresses that and talks about how he'll always love her. And, not that I think it could be delved into deeper, but I think more of what troubles me about the character of like quote unquote fat Monica is that when she has Courtney Cox wore suit for it. Mm-hmm. And when she is portrayed as her younger self, she's more childlike, even when she's supposed to be like 18 and 20.
Yep.
And therefore like is portrayed a little less intelligent. And I think it's more problematic of how Monica is portrayed in her younger years and how, but then it's interesting too, because one of the creators, Marta Kaufman, always says that she loves Fat Monica because she's just so happy. And so I'm like, okay, so it's confusing and I think problematic in some areas. That scene didn't strike me as one of the worst ones, though.
Okay, Irene?
Yeah, I think it's funny because Chandler is getting called out. So that's what makes it funny. But I agree with when you were going to play a clip, I thought you were going to play something of Fat Monica. Mm. And I think that was, those were the really problematic scenes that were like, ooh, even when I was younger, I was like, really? This is a little much. So.
Well, let's take the only break of the hour. We're going to come back and I want to ask our guests if they think we are being overly analytical of a show that is, you know, 3 decades old, roughly, 2 to 3 decades old, or if it's fair to say, you know, every bit of cultural ephemera, it's interesting to look back on and figure out where they were forward-looking and where they were clearly not, and sometimes what the impact on the culture could be. I mean, this was a show that was one of the most popular shows ever. More than 50 million people watched the finale, and James Corden cited some gaudy stat, like 5 billion views since it went into syndication on various platforms. I mean, it's a lot. So we're talking about the cultural impact of Friends with Irene Cagno, a freelance writer and editor who covers tech and culture. Deanna Spiata is a communication specialist and a singer-songwriter. She's got new material out, by the way. Amanda Chestnut, artist and educator with us. And Doug Jay is a contributing writer for the political commentary website Balloon Juice. And we are right back with them next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, we bring you special programming. In our first hour, it's Small Change, Money Stories from the Neighborhood. It's an hour highlighting practical and collaborative money skills developed by experts who have lived with lower and unstable incomes. Then in our second hour, it's been 1 year since George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis. Minnesota Public Radio host Angela Davis offers a reflection on how he changed us. That's Monday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you just tuned in like 20 seconds ago wondering, why am I not hearing Connections on WXXI? Well, Ross, where were we?
We were on a break!
We were on a break. I'm proud of that one, guys.
Nice.
I'm proud of that one.
That was well played, Evan.
I am proud of that one because that's one of the plot lines I actually liked. I enjoyed. I think at the very end of the series, even when Ross and Rachel predictably get back together, you know, he says, she says, like, you know, I'm never going to leave you. We're always going to be together. And he says something like, even if we're on a break, and she's like, okay, this is not the time for that joke. I thought that was a relatable plot line, you know, like the way couples can argue over that stuff. So, Irene, you got to settle it. Yes, they were on a break, but were Ross's actions okay?
I will say adult Irene says yes.
Taking Ross's side.
Spice it up a little bit.
Okay, Deanna?
Oh, this is the impossible question to answer. It's hard because they didn't communicate about what a break means. So, yes, they're on a break. I feel that Ross's actions were hurtful. I don't know if they're right or wrong, but they were hurtful to Rachel.
Okay. Amanda?
I think that, yeah, I'm going to agree that there was a definite lack of communication happening there, but I'm inclined to side with Ross on this one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Doug?
Yeah, that's where I am too. Lack of communication, but on balance, I think that Ross is right.
All right. Well, I did enjoy that plot line. I very much enjoyed the letter, that plot line. I thought that was pretty funny and relatable. So there are some things I liked. Deanna, for you, what was the glue for the series that made you keep coming back? And do you have a favorite moment or episode?
I think part of it, like I said, was just the kind of the escapism from my life. And I also really love the comedic timing of the actors and the physical comedy that's included, especially by David Schwimmer. I have a background in theater, and sometimes it felt like a play. My favorite episode of all time is called The One with the Embryos. And it's called that because Phoebe serves as a surrogate for her brother and his wife, and she gets pregnant in the episode. But I love it because it's the episode actually that they recreated with the reunion where they all take a quiz to see how well they know each other. And there's just something fun about watching them quiz each other and how well they know each other and messing up and getting the answers wrong and getting them right. And I just love that episode.
Well, here's a note from a listener named Andrea who says, I'm disappointed in the level of this conversation about Friends. I'm a communications professional. Raise it up. This show moved popular culture. In what direction and to where? Answer that. Do we really need to talk about fat shaming, Evan? Lift this conversation. There's such good stuff to talk about. This was 20 years ago. We can't cancel culture, our entire history. Come on. That is from Andrea. I'm going to let Amanda Chestnut take the first crack at answering that one. What do you think, Amanda?
I'm not entirely sure what this show did other than exist for a long time that was particularly impactful on American culture. It centered whiteness as normative. It centered mediocrity, white mediocrity as normative. You can be perfectly boring and normal and never barely work and whine a whole lot and have a beautiful apartment in Manhattan and everyone will keep coming back to you like they love you. Like, there's nothing particularly moving about most of these characters for them to have earned their position. And I'm not sure what it is. Like, there is nothing stellar about the writing, the inclusion, the diversity, nothing particularly. There's a lot of shows, especially in the middle, late 90s that were on that were really transformative for American culture. And I don't think addressing everything from addiction to queer culture to all sorts of stuff and Friends didn't do any of that.
But did it move the culture in any way, Amanda, that you can sort of perceive?
If it did anything, it had an impact on letting people believe it's okay to be a jerk. It had an impact by centering this kind of whiteness as normative and having any other kind of whiteness, and especially black and brownness, be othered. So no, I don't think any impact that it might have had wasn't necessarily positive.
Doug, how would you respond to Andrea's point that we need to raise this conversation up? Yeah.
I don't think it had very much impact on culture. No, I mean I think that part of the reason why it was popular was because of when it came about and how the culture around it, you know, like for example, that was just when living in New York was becoming popular again, right? And 4 years earlier was viewed as this crime-ridden hellhole. Also, this whole mix of like, oh, everything's terrible, we can't find a job, right? Because the early 90s had a bad economy, then everything was great from then on in. And so that kind of mixture of being downtrodden and self-pitying on the one hand, but on the other hand, everything going great. I mean, I think a lot of things about it were, I think it was a product of the culture and it was popular because of what was going on culturally at the time. But I think that it was more shaped by culture and was lucky in terms of when it came about culturally than it had any actual effect on culture. I think it went the other way.
Right.
It was affected by culture.
Irene is a culture writer. What do you think?
Two things. Of course it had an impact on the culture. Everyone wanted the Rachel haircut. So
see, there you go. There's one.
Impactful on the young women of the day. And I think I disagree with the fact that the comedy writing was terrible. I think what it did was, and I'm in agreement with everyone who says that it's basically a white version of Living Single. That show started, it began airing the year before Friends. And I love that style of physical comedy. I love those cheap jokes, especially when I was younger. And a lot of Living Single still holds up today while Friends doesn't. And I feel like they just transposed that style of joking and comedy onto a white cast, took out all the complexity, and then regurgitated it to white America. And like without the complexity, it's just like cheap jokes. It's just so easy to laugh with. It's so easy, especially if you're white, to watch and just escape and forget about all your problems. So of course it was going to be something that was easily digestible for certain groups of people. And those certain groups of people happened to be the majority who had the voice, who were in the critics' rooms, who were at the award shows, all that. So I think there are a lot of reasons for its success. And there are reasons why it was funny, and it was funny, but those reasons aren't necessarily good.
Deanna, did you have a Rachel haircut?
No, I was 7 when the show premiered, and then 17 when it the finale came out. So I was kind of blind to Friends until after it came on DVD.
Do you think it moved the culture at all, Deanna?
I'm not sure. I think all the other panelists make very good points. I'm not sure if it moves culture in other ways besides, I think Irene brings up a good point about fashion. Honestly, even some Gen Zers today, because they've been watching it on Netflix before it went off of Netflix, I think because they're all watching Friends and 90s styles kind of back in, I think that's influenced some young people. But I think people probably like it because it feels nostalgic and comforting to them. Maybe they feel like I used to watch it. I live alone, and so I would watch it and not feel so alone, just like to have something on in the background. But perhaps, you know, did it only feel comforting or nostalgic to a certain audience while it left out other audiences? And so I'm not sure if it made a huge impact with culture at large in terms of anti-racism, definitely not.
No.
And Friends did have the first lesbian wedding on TV, on television, but then, you know, you have all the other jokes that are homophobic. So I feel like I don't know how to weigh that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Now, I will say, watching the reunion special last night, which I was not paid extra for, but I did it because I will do anything for this program. There was an interesting moment where Lady Gaga gets together with Lisa Kudrow, and, you know, and it's sort of a pre-produced plan of them playing Lady Gaga playing Smelly Cat with Lisa Kudrow, and it's, you know, it's funny. I actually liked the Phoebe character a lot. I thought Lisa Kudrow was pretty good in that character because she wasn't just flaky. I mean, it was sort of a flaky kind of character, but still really loving and loyal and interesting. And what Lady Gaga says in the special is, she says to Lisa Kudrow, thank you for being, for lack of a better word, the different one, and showing us that it's okay to be different and that we can feel comfortable in our own skin no matter if we're not like all the other friends in our friend group. And I thought that was an interesting point. I mean, I don't know if Lisa Kudrow's character is, you know, can be given that much credit for the Lady Gagas of the world, but I thought that that was a warm and loving sort of salute to what was, to me, one of the more interesting characters in the show. What do you think, Amanda?
I, first of all, think that Smelly Cat is probably the best part of Friends, like the entire season series of Friends. I think that Smelly Cat was probably the best thing to come out of it. I still sing it to this day to my cat. He is occasionally a smelly cat. he can't help it. But I think that Lisa Kudrow is great. Phoebe is my favorite character on the show, and I think that Lisa Kudrow is a brilliant actress. She's very, very talented. And so I think that there is, you know, I wish that Phoebe was a more dynamic character, but I think that there is more depth to her character than in most of the other characters in the show. So I do appreciate that. And I did watch the clip of Lady Gaga singing Smelly Cat.
Yeah, and I really thought that was a sweet thing to say about that particular character. What did you think, Irene?
I love Phoebe, and actually just before the show, I just picked a random Friends episode, and I'm like halfway through it. And it's Phoebe in the coffee shop showing Rachel a new song she wrote, and it's a song of her basically narrating her shower. And one of the refrains is lather, rinse, repeat, and then the next scene cuts to Rachel talking to her boss. And her boss is like, we're going to hire someone else to sing from now on. And Phoebe's character, you asked Deanna what the glue for the show was.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Phoebe's character arc was something that kept me watching. I loved to see what was going to happen with her life and how she, like, became a surrogate and then found love. Like, I love Phoebe's character arc, and it did make me fall in love with Lisa Kudrow as an actress. and shown, I mean, she has such staying power here. Like, I feel like she's still popping up in pop culture. Yeah, Phoebe, I'm a fan. Like, I could say I'm a super fan of Phoebe, if not the show.
That's interesting. Yeah, and I had forgotten until last night that it was Paul Rudd that she was dating, because Paul Rudd is 100 years old and still looks the same. So Deanna, when I think about characters,
it's really cute.
Deanna, I think Phoebe probably had the fewest centered plots, but I think it would have been interesting to see her get more. But I did appreciate Lady Gaga's comments there. What did you think about that, Deanna?
I agree with Amanda and Irene. I think Phoebe is the most authentic character, and Lady Gaga said that. She said that Phoebe was most fully herself, and I think that really speaks to me and to people. So I think, like, growing up, I always wanted to be a Rachel, but I really think I'm a Monica. But now as an adult, I'm like, I want to be Phoebe, because she's just most authentically herself. And then I think they really did explore more Phoebe-centered plot lines, especially in season 10 when she got married. And that was nice to see.
And Doug, what did you think there?
I totally agree. I think that Phoebe was, I think Phoebe and I like Joey as well. I think the other four were a little bit too much like the ones that you're supposed to relate to and think are like you. And, I think that was a weakness in the show a little bit too. It was too much pandering, like, oh, I'm just like them. And I thought having a couple more weird characters, I thought the weird characters were funnier and had more depth to them.
Well, listen, I want to give all you about 40 seconds for some final thoughts. We've got to keep it tight, but I want to close with this question. How much of this is fair to go back and really granularly look through old shows and ask what they got right and got wrong, and how much of this, you know, do we need to say, hey, people like what they like? Amanda.
People are definitely allowed to like what they like. And I didn't like it when it came out, and I don't have to like it now. I don't even have to go back and look at it and find things to dislike. I didn't really like it the first time around that much. So, yeah, sure. Go ahead. Like what you like.
Irene, can you?
I say, yeah, let's go back and look at it and see how these shows age over time, because it's informing, like, what's getting created now, too. So I think we can go back and analyze it, and I think we can critique it, because there are ways that they could have known better and done better. So I'm all for it. I'll do 10 more shows like this if you want.
But Irene, when you say that's still impacting what's being created now, is that based on just the popularity of this kind of a series is inevitably going to spin, like, have spinoffs or knockoffs, that kind of a thing?
Well, I don't know. I think it's a little bit more like the industry. When you're writing, I think a lot of TV writers will base a lot of their content on what worked in the past, right? And where they went wrong, and who's in the writer's room, and who's being able to create. So that's what I mean.
Okay. Doug?
Yeah, I think it's totally fair to go back and critique things. People can like what they like, but it is true. Something that popular will affect things a lot in terms of what gets made and what gets greenlighted and so on in the future. And so, yeah, I think it's valuable to go back and look at things and see why maybe they really weren't so great. And we shouldn't be mimicking them anymore.
Deanna, I'm letting you hit cleanup here on your beloved show.
Thank you. I definitely think it's fair to go back and analyze things we love and shows that we love. I think that sometimes people feel like it's a threat to their nostalgia or a threat to something that they've grown up with. What does that say about me? But I think that that should be embraced, and we can still love and appreciate something while acknowledging things that are problematic and that we can correct in our daily lives.
Well, there's a lot of there's still a lot of love for Friends. So if listeners are Friends fans, like what you like, and, you know, all the love. Andrea says, follows up to say, what about Friends as family? Just like the creators talked about on the reunion, it bred more friendship shows, and therefore in real life, singles living or looking at their lives differently. And she says, it's popular to bash, but this writing was breakthrough. It is still one of the most popular shows out there. And why is that? Because it resonates. That's from Andrea. I appreciate that, Andrea. You're certainly right that it resonates. And interestingly enough, it resonates with a huge audience who was not even born at the time. And, you know, I have a note from a 20-something listener who says, I think part of the relevance is because I don't think there's been any other lighthearted sitcom in the U.S. that has essentially successfully captured the essence of a friend group of 20-something-somethings just living their lives through dating, work, drama. That 70s show tried with teens, but it was a period piece. Other shows like Freaks and Geeks, which is huge in my friend group, are cult classics but are more drama than sitcom. So it's a really a comfort show for me. That's from a 20-something. And this is a very popular show with people who did not watch it when it was first on, which makes it different that way. So, all right. So we're going to let you all go now and head for the weekend. Irene Canyo, always great having you. Thanks for being with us.
Good having you. And I'm going to say to that writer, watch Girlfriends and Living Single if you want more of that. That's all. All right. Signing off.
There you go. Living Single. Amanda Chestnut's going to endorse that one. Amanda, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Deanna Spiato, we look forward to more from you. Good luck as a singer-songwriter with your new material. And thanks for being on.
Thanks so much, Evan. This was fun.
And Douglas J. See you on Balloon Juice and other platforms. Thank you, Doug.
Thanks for having me.
From Rob Braden, Emery Stein.
We were on a break!
Megan Mack, Emery Stein, Evan Dawson saying, have a great weekend. Because you're there for me too. Because you're there for me too.